Welcome, everyone, to episode 402 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we are going to make some early All-Star picks. Before we get into that, a reminder, you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we're recording our show today on Locker Room, the only live audio social network for sports fans. Listen to our show on Locker Room before it hits your iTunes feed, engage with us in real time, or start your own room to react to the draft, trade news, and more. Take the mic and download Locker Room in the Apple App Store. Joining me today is someone who I know is excited to talk All-Star Game in the beginning of February, Morten Jensen. How's it going?
It is going well, Brian. I'm actually not that against talking about All-Star. I mean, one thing is whether or not the game is even a good idea, but, I mean, All-Star is part of the game. It becomes the status thing, which is what I'm mostly against, right? Because sometimes it becomes about the narrative instead of what a guy is doing out there.
Sure. You just hate awards talk. Premature awards talk, but premature All-Star talk.
I hate six-man talk. I hate six-man talk specifically.
That's fair. Yeah. Well, so we should preface this by saying the fact that they're having an All-Star game this year is just incredibly stupid. They're still in final negotiations for it. It's supposed to be on March 7th. I just, from a health perspective, especially considering what just happened with Kevin Durant last night in that Nets-Raptors game where he was held out from the start, then allowed to play, then pulled out again because of contact tracing. Like, the NBA should just be holding its breath every single day just to get through this stupid season. And there's no reason to have this other than money. So it's a gross money grab. I abhor it. With that said, I'm detaching myself from the fact there's going to be an actual game. And I'm just thinking of it in terms of, you know, the legacy talk or whatever, just like who deserves to be an All-Star this year? Similar to what the NFL did with the Pro Bowl. They named Pro Bowlers. They did not have a Pro Bowl. They played it on Madden. Great. That's what the NBA should do too. But so we're not endorsing the idea of a live All-Star game by having this episode. We're just saying who deserves the distinction of All-Star based on what they've done through the first, you know, 6 weeks of the season. With all of that said, Mort, I think the easiest way, I've went through and made some locks, some near locks, and some maybes for each conference. I think let's start with the East. We'll go through the guys who I think are locks right away. I doubt there will be much debate there, and then we can focus our time mostly on the other guys filling out the rest of that roster.
Right.
So in the East, I have Joel Embiid as a lock.
Agreed.
I have Kevin Durant as a lock.
Agreed.
Assuming he's allowed to play basketball again. Who knows at this point?
Right.
I have Giannis Antetokounmpo as a lock.
Obviously.
Okay. I have Jaylen Brown as a lock.
Yep, agreed.
Jason Tatum as well.
Mm-hmm.
And James Harden.
Yeah, I guess. Why not?
If writers and coaches and fans can detach themselves from the gross way that he kicked himself out of Houston. I mean, his play has been, you know, he's leading the league right now with 11.3 assists per game, shooting. Since coming to the Nets, he's almost at a 50-40-90 split. He's been really good. Despite those couple games that he's mailed in, he's been really good this year.
Yeah.
Okay. So we got six spots filled already. I don't care about starters. I think it'll probably end up being, I guess we have a guard spot to fill in the starting lineup, unless Harden is going to get it, which I don't know if he is. But, you know, it's probably going to be KD, Giannis starting forwards, Embiid starting center, Jaylen Brown should be one of the two starting guard spots. I don't care about the other. We're not focusing on the positional limits today.
And why are we not doing that? Because positions in an All-Star game is incredibly stupid. Because we are looking at an NBA where positions matter less and less on an annual basis. So right. Why is it that we're still so attached to having, you know, backcourt, frontcourt breakdowns for All-Star game voting. Like, let's be honest, Jaylen Brown, Giannis Antetokounmpo, those guys are like a perfect example, right? I mean, Giannis is, you would always classify him as a forward, but he handles ball to the same volume as a point guard. So what is he? What about Nikola Jokic in the West? Like, yeah, he's a center, but he's handling the ball that way. Jaylen Brown literally switches between guard and forward all the time. You could argue the same for Chris Middleton, to some extent also Zach LaVine. Like, it's just it's so muddy. Why not just go with the best players and then whatever shakes out, shakes out?
Right. Well, I mean, I know the centers would push back, even though there isn't a designated center spot on the ballot anymore, but they'd be sad that they might get bumped out, even though I don't think based on this year, I mean...
Then play better.
Yeah, and as we had the episode recently where we went through quarter season awards, and we said Jokic and Embiid are two of the leading MVP candidates. So I think both of those guys would be locks of the All-Star lineup, even if there weren't positional designations. Yeah. But yeah, to your point about Jaylen Brown... You know, this year he's played slightly more minutes at small forward instead of shooting guard, according to the Basketball Reference play-by-play position estimate. He's at 51% small forward, 44% shooting guard. So I don't know what position he plays, and I don't care. He should be an All-Star starter.
No, but right. And see, those numbers specifically for Boston Celtics players just don't hold water for me, because he's playing the four,
yeah,
like a traditional four once in a while as well. I mean, if you look, at least if you look at it from a more logical perspective when you watch a gameplay. But like, Brad Stevens is all out on positions. He's just like, I'm going to put the guys in that make sense. It's more matchup dependent than it is traditional lineup anyway. Right. So, yeah. I just wanted to get that out of the way. Positions, yes, are dumb.
So, we are not going to limit ourselves to... We're not going to focus on starters and reserves at all right now. We're just trying to hammer down which 12 guys deserve to be on the team, and then we can figure out the rest later. But yeah, we also don't care about positions because, as Mort says, positions are dumb in this, but especially these days.
Right.
So let's get into the guys I have as near locks, Mort. And I know you are going to push back against this first one, but I think Kyrie Irving is a near lock to be in this game.
No, I don't think I'm going to push back on that. I would have pushed back if you called him just a lock, because that would have been three Nets players on a team that is four games over 500. Plus, he's missed eight games, which, you know, given that we're discussing this right now, that matters. Mm-hmm. It might not matter when we go to March and he's played every single game by then. That's cool. But right now, I can only take into account that he's missed eight games out of 24 played. That's a significant chunk. So having him as a near lock, no problem there.
I'm proud of you. I really thought I would get
for
more
what?
Pushback
like,
here.
That's... No. That's fine. I would have a problem if you put him in as a lock. I mean, being available, I think, more so than ever, is a skill now.
Well, this year, maybe not.
That's true. But we don't know what caused him to, and that wasn't an injury.
Right.
Like, he just, it was something, right? And that's not on him. I'm not saying, you know, he did something bad by walking away. What I'm saying is he just didn't play, and we have to take into account guys that play. And I, you know, regardless of whether or not this is a pandemic year, we still have to take that into account. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and vote a guy in who's played one game.
Yeah, well, of course. But no, I think regardless of the circumstances behind his absence, I think this year... The availability question is probably going to be less of a factor just because so many big name guys have missed games, and especially if it's for COVID related reasons or like contact tracing related reasons. Like, I mean, KD, again, super lock regardless of how many games he has to miss because of the latest situation. But I don't want to hold those types of things against players, and it wouldn't surprise me if we get to the All-Star selections and we realize like, oh, most of these guys have missed a couple games at this point, at least a couple games at this point, for whatever reason.
Right. But what if KD doesn't play another game until after the All-Star game? Then what? Would you still have him in this a lot?
I think so. I think he's been that good that I probably would.
No, he has. Yeah. But, I mean, we also have to be fair to other players. I mean, if Durant ends up having played only 18 games, how fair is that to guys who may have played 26, 27, or whatever the number might be at that point?
Yeah, it's a fair point. I mean, again, I just don't want, especially for guys who get caught up in COVID tracing in particular, or miss time because of COVID in particular, like that just, I mean, I guess the notion of fairness is out the window this year as it is last year. But
I was presuming we were working under those conditions.
This,
I mean,
this whole thing is stupid. I hate.
I hate this. So let's do an entire podcast episode about.
I just hate this entire season. It's the 72 game preseason. Yep. But for Kyrie, he's averaging a career high 27.5 points per game, shooting career highs across the board. 53 from the field, 43 from three. 93 from the free throw line, chipping in almost 6 assists, 5 rebounds a game. I just think this is the best version we've ever seen of Kyrie. And I know the argument could be, well, of course, he's playing next to Kevin Durant and James Harden. He doesn't have to, you know, he's like the most over-equipped third banana of all time.
Right.
But I don't think we can hold that against, like, we can't hold his team construction against him, can we?
Oh, no. No, I don't think you can hold team construction against him, but I mean, I do think there is a point, and that's not just for Kyrie, but on teams that are absolutely loaded, and to be fair, no other team in the league has this level of top-tier talent, yeah. I would argue, you do get some benefits. Of course you do. Like when you have James Harden and Kevin Durant on the court at the same time, you are going to get more open shots. Is that a good thing? Yes, it absolutely is for the team and for your championship aspirations and all that. But from an individual level, you also have to look at it as going, okay, so what does that guy do, you know, from a self-creation standpoint and whatnot? Like, no, but I agree with you. Like, he's still putting up 27.5 points per game, and the percentage is, you know, he's hitting those open shots.
Right.
He's doing the things that he needs to be doing. So for him specifically, yeah, I'm okay with that. But it is fair to generally ponder, you know, how good are guys specifically when they're playing next to top-tier talent? I mean, Joe Harris, by comparison, is hitting almost 50% of his threes on 3-point field goal attempts per night. Would he have done that without the presence of Irving, Durant, and Harden? I doubt it.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
so it's just like a trickle-down thing.
For Kyrie in particular, self-creation is the least of my concerns. I'll say that much.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No. Right. And that was not Kyrie-specific. Right. It's just the general gist of it, right?
Yeah.
Like, DeAndre Jordan is shooting 82% from the field.
I was watching that Nets game last night, and I'm wondering now if the Nets are rope-a-doping with DeAndre Jordan. Like, he's such a non-presence on offense. But he's getting at least like 3 or 4 lobs a game since Harden came over. Like, teams just completely lose track of him when he's just floating under the basket because they're like, oh, whatever, if he's 6 feet away, he's not going to shoot. But then he's just getting a lot of easy buckets because of it. It's actually, it might be some real galaxy brain stuff from the Nets here.
If he ends the year shooting close to 85% from the field, how crazy would that be?
All he does is dunk.
Like, yeah.
I mean, Dwight Howard misses dunks all the time, so I guess it might be hard. But yeah, I don't know. It's just a thought that is now in the back of my mind. Like, maybe this is some 12D chess that they're playing with DeAndre Jordan.
He's missed 15 shots this year over 23 games.
That's wild. All right, another near lock for me is Bam Adebayo. I know the Heat have been awful this year, but they've been just ravaged between, you know, Jimmy Butler missing a ton of time, Tyler Hero missing time, Avery Bradley's now out for a couple weeks, Myers Leonard's out for the season, Tyler Hero's been missing shots at a pretty high volume that I think is going to regress positively to the mean. I'm still not super concerned about Miami in terms of missing the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm not at all.
Yeah, and Bam has just, I mean, he was an all-star last year already. He's much better this year. He's averaging 20 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, shooting almost 60% from the field. You know, given the rest of the Heat's injury struggles, like, I shudder to think where they would be without Bam Adebayo playing this well.
I agree. I wouldn't even have hated it if you put him up in the East locks, But as you said, the Heat just have not had the performance overall to maybe justify that position. Right. But on an individual skill level, I think he definitely deserves to be a lock. He is tremendous.
Yeah.
Just absolutely tremendous. So I would have a very hard time trying to argue against him. Not that I would want to.
Right, right. So next on my near locks list is a guy who missed the All-Star game last year. But I think Bradley Beal has to be in this year.
I mean, you're talking about a guy who's scoring in, what, the mid-30s right now?
33.3 points per game, 47.2% from the field, averaging 5 rebounds, almost 5 assists, hitting almost 3 threes a night. Like, it is not his fault the Wizards suck.
No, it's certainly not, and I don't think it helps having, you know, Russell Westbrook up next to him. I don't think that opens things up for him.
Yeah.
That he's just someone who takes away spacing, so I don't think that's going to make life easier. Based on, again, this really comes down to individual talent, right? More than any time before, I think, especially because of the structure of the season, because of the pandemic and whatnot, we have to look at just the individual skill level, the individual production. Like, individuality is going to be the big name here, and Beal certainly has all of those going for him. So I would agree. It would shock me if he wasn't in.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he's going to be a starter, but I think the coaches should at least, like, give it to him if for no other reason. And just, like, we're sorry that you're stuck on this terrible team, but we at least recognize your talent. And, yeah, he has to be in.
Right. So that's nine,
that
right?
is nine guys that we have. So we have three spots left. The next guy, I have one more near lock, and this is the guy I'm least certain about as a near lock, so maybe he belongs in the maybes, but I have him as a near lock for now. Domantas Sabonis, who is, you know, talking about injury-ravaged teams, the Pacers are down TJ Warren, they traded Oladipo for LeVert, who has not played a minute for them and will not for the foreseeable future. Sabonis made the All-Star game last year. I would argue he's better this year. You know, competition might be tougher this year, but I think, you know, I know the Pacers they're fifth in the East right now, but, like, they're in that morass of teams that, you know, are separated by two or three games. So he's again the one I feel least comfortable calling as a near lock, but I think if he's in the maybe category instead, he should be at the top of the maybes.
Yeah, I mean, so this again comes down to the whole what is the All-Star game discussion, right? Yeah. Because, you know, it is still a show game. It is one of athleticism and trick plays and whatnot. And in that sense, he doesn't fit the game. But in terms of being an NBA player and someone who contributes mightily to a team and who is well-deserving of every accolade he could get, yes, then I feel like he's in the same category as Bam, as almost a lock, because he's that good. This is a guy who is essentially the closest thing you'll find in the Eastern Conference to a Nikola Jokic, at the big spot. Someone who initiates the offense, someone who scores, someone who rebounds, someone who does just a ton of different things. So yes, if we are looking at just basketball and we're forgetting the showtime aspect of it, put his ass in there immediately.
Yeah. All right, so that leaves us with 9 or 10, depending on how you feel about Sabonis, but we'll say 10 for now, because we both think he's in. So, Mort...
Right, agreed.
Let's go to those last two spots, the maybes. There are a ton of candidates for these two spots. Who would you pick for your last two?
I would go... Yeah, see, this is a tough one, because I actually have three candidates for two spots. Okay. The three candidates are Trae Young, Zach LaVine, and Nikola Vucevic.
Okay.
And you could always argue Chris Middleton, you can argue Tobias Harris and those type of guys. But those are the three that I boiled down to. And it gets tough for me, because emotionally, I want to take Nikola Vucevic really, really badly. He's just been so good. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's scoring over 23 points per game, grabbing 11 rebounds. You know, he's sort of a playmaker, almost 4 assists per game. His shooting has just been tremendous. I mean, 43% from the outside on high volume. He's one of the best offensive players or offensive centers in the NBA. Hell, you know what? I'll go with it. One of the best offensive players in the NBA. I mean, look, that kind of production with that kind of efficiency. I mean, are you kidding me? That's tremendous. And Orlando doesn't really have a whole lot going for them,
right?
So you kind of want to give them a success story, and Vucevic is that success story. But at the same time, if I pick him, I have to say that one of Trae Young or Zach LaVine has to be out of there, and I don't think either should. I think both of them should be in. Zach LaVine, we can talk about Chicago's record. It's bad, right. And if you go off of that, sure. But he is miscast as a number one guy. This is something we've been talking about before, mm-hmm. which isn't his fault, necessarily. Or not even necessarily, it's not. And what he's done in while being miscast has been superb. I mean, 26.5 points per game, over 5 rebounds, over 5 assists, almost 40 from 3, 50 from the field, almost 90 from the line, true shooting percentage of 64. Like, for someone who isn't a number one guy, he is sure as hell doing everything he can to at least try to justify being that guy, even though that's not, you know, in the cards in the future. I'm tremendously impressed with what he's done this year. And sure, he's turning the ball over a ton, but you know what? Guys who handle the ball to the same extent that he does, they do that. Yeah. At the same time, he's doing this, by the way, without a point guard. Like, can we also just... No, but I mean, you're laughing, but it's true. Kobe White is not a point guard. I think this has been so clear during Chicago season. Like, he's not a point guard. So LaVine, who is not a point guard himself, who isn't a creator, has somehow managed this without having a proper point guard by his side setting him up. That matters to me. That's the kind of context that matters to me. And as for Trae Young, I mean, look, it has not been super pretty in Atlanta, and he's been the main constant, I feel. I mean, that is the one guy you can still go to who you know what you're going to get out of him, you know, every single night. That matters. And he's still got the court vision. He's still got the pull-up, long, you know, three-pointers. He's still got the shake-and-bake game. He's got every of those components moving. The reason he's not doing, you know, how can you say it, as well as last year, I think, is because of all the moving pieces on the roster, mm-hmm. which I think is also, again, context. That matters, no?
Yeah, of course. And, I mean, they also, you know, talk about injuries, like, all of the guys they brought in this offseason who we were very hyped about and thought, you know, this Hawks team was going to be interesting, they all got hurt right away. So it was like right back to we have last year's Hawks team. And I know, you know, some of them come back since, so it's not they are getting the reinforcements back. And they are technically right now sixth in the East at 10-12. So if nothing else, like Trae Young made it last year and he was on one of the worst teams in the NBA. So now he's on a playoff team, I guess, if you want to call a 10-12 team a playoff team. Right. So he could actually get in on merit in terms of team, and then Bradley Beal can take his spot from last year as you're on a garbage team, but we recognize your talent. So this might be the best of both worlds.
Right.
But no.
That said, we still need to pick.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I know, it's tough.
That one is tough. It is really tough.
Well, do you think... Let's go down your three. Do you think Trae Young should be in? Because if you think he's in, then you can narrow it down between LaVine and Vooch.
Yeah, I think he is in. I think LaVine is in. As much as I hate this, you know what? I actually have a solution.
Expand the All-Star roster?
Yes, because the rosters got expanded for the regular season.
That's true.
So why shouldn't that logic let's have move over to the
All-Star? Two-way players in the All-Star game?
You know what? I would actually love that. That would be fantastic to me. No, but
if we weren't bringing more players to the actual game, then yes, I agree. Let's name 15 for all I care.
Right. No, if I have to, I'm going LaVine and Trae, and then I'll take the bullet to the heart for not being able to pick Vooch, and I'll hate every second of it. And then I'll make this caveat that if someone is injured or, you know, God forbid, has coronavirus or whatever, mm-hmm. Vooch should be the first guy to come in as a replacement.
Are you just mad that Vooch dropped 43-19 on the Bulls last night?
No, I love that. Okay. That was so good. That game was fantastic from his perspective, and I actually called it almost. We have this Bulls DM group, and before the game started, I was like, Vooch is going to drop 50 on them, isn't he? And then he dropped 43-19. I would say that's acceptable, yeah, right? That's a good prediction. Yeah. He was awesome.
Yeah.
Like, he is just such a good player, and I've been watching him this year, and I think he does so well without having that, clock front court. Being able to have him as the consistent guy who can produce, it changes what the Magic can do. And I wonder, at the same time, like, we've already had this discussion about LaVine when we had Jason on, mm-hmm. in terms of should the Bulls cash in on Zach LaVine and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that the Orlando Magic could not get a pretty decent haul for Nikola Vucevic if they decided to go that route.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think that's the number one trade target for the Boston Celtics. If the Magic are willing to shop Vooch, he fits into that trade exception.
He does. And I actually, there was a Dane who asked me about this today. I actually don't love that trade necessarily, because I think he's a guy who needs to have touches. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't just use Vooch just as a spot-up big man. That's not his game. And I really, really love the way that Tatum and Brown are basically running the offense from the wings. I would question whether or not this would be a suitable long-term fit. Because unless, of course, Vooch comes in and he says, you know what, I'm at a certain age, I don't care about personal stats. Yeah. I will complement everything else. If he came in with that mindset, and I wouldn't blame him if he didn't, by the way, but if he came in and said, you know what, let Jason and Jalen run the show, and then me and Kemba will take the outside shots, we'll be opportunistic scorers, then yes, all in. But then the question is, what do you give up?
It's almost like they could have had a much better fit in Miles Turner, but alas.
Oh, boy. Yep. Well, I mean, no, but I mean, like, legitimately, what do you give up?
Yeah,
I mean, it's you can say Langford, you can say Aaron Nesmith, and then you can go future first rounders, yeah. I guess. But like, is that an attractive package for Orlando?
Well, for Orlando, and Vooch's all-star candidacy in particular, he's another one like Beal where you can't hold team success against him, even like Bam, because already coming into the year, Jonathan Isaac is out for the year. Mo Bamba's recovering from COVID, hasn't played a ton. Then you lose Markel Fultz early in the season, and we just lose Aaron Gordon for at least a month, I believe. So, like, if you look at the lineup they trotted out against the Bulls, it is a rookie point guard in Cole Anthony, Evan Fournier, who's missed a ton of time, and then James Ennis. Like, no, this is not Gary Clark, who scored 0 points.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a exceedingly bad team, and it is not Vooch's fault. It's just they got absolutely hammered by injuries. So I'm with you in thinking it's between, man, I mean, yeah, Trey, LaVine, Vooch, Middleton. I know there's been a lot of talk on Sixers Twitter about Tobias Harris getting in, which, and like, the Sixers are openly campaigning for it at this point. It's hard for me to just see a spot for him. He's been playing really well. This is the best version of Tobias Harris that we've seen, so I don't want to say he's undeserving of it. It's just, what's the argument for Tobias Harris over Vucevic other than team success?
There is none.
Yeah.
And I say that fully agreeing with you that Tobias Harris has been great.
Or even, like, what's the argument for Tobias Harris over Chris Middleton?
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. I mean, I would go Middleton.
I mean, again, Tobias Harris has been playing really well.
He has.
I think team success is the thing we're leaning on here. You know, traditionally, the top team in both conferences get multiple All-Stars, which makes sense. But I think in this particular case, the Sixers have just leaned so heavily on Joel Embiid that he's in with a bullet. He's a starter with a bullet, but, like, I can't make an all-star case for Ben Simmons this year.
No, that's one name I also noticed was not on your list and not on me and mine either. So that's disappointing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think with the Sixers in particular, I think they built a roster that complements each other really well when they're all healthy. But yeah, as we saw against Portland the other night, when one of the main guys is out, it gets ugly quickly. So, like, Ben Simmons is really important to what they do, and he should be all first, the first team all defense without question. He's been that good defensively, but you know he's taking a step back as a scorer to be more of a facilitator. And like, yeah, you'd like to see him, you know, attempt a three occasionally, yes, but also just being more aggressive around the basket. There are things you'd like to see him work on offensively. He started showing off a nice little hook shot against Charlotte the other night. That's a nice counter that you hope to see more of. But yeah, through the first 20 games or whatever of the season, I can't make a case for him. And again,
I honestly don't care about hooks or threes. You know what I care? I care about him basically copying LeBron and being a freight train.
Well, that's, yeah, he just needs to be like more aggressive around the basket. He needs to draw more free throws and actually knock them down at a higher clip as well. So
yeah, no, but just finish on guys. Yeah. Look, here's the thing. Let's just be completely honest here about the NBA, okay? If you are a 6'10", 250-pound monster, and he is, and he's lean, and he's muscular, and he's got long arms, if you're going full speed ahead down the paint, you know what? 8 out of 10 times, that other guy standing beneath the basket is, I don't want to say getting out of the way, but he's not going up Alonzo Mourning style.
Right,
I'll tell you that.
Right. Yeah. So I can't make a case for Ben at all. And Tobias, I love him. And I think if he gets it, I'd be thrilled for the guy. It couldn't happen to a better guy. But I just can't make a good case for him other than team success. The two other guys I wanted to hit on quickly, Julius Randle. What do we think of his all-star? I mean, he's been playing exceedingly well for a Knicks team that is not half bad. Right now, they are the number 8 seed.
I think he's finally been unleashed in a role that's suitable for him. And I say that while I'm also going to come up with the Zach LaVine thing. He's not the number 1 guy. He's been miscast as number 1 guy, but what he's doing in that role is really impressive. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's handling the basketball, he's passing the ball, he's still rebounding, he's scoring, he's shooting threes, and he's become the focal point of the offense. It's been really good for him. Like, he's not a top-tier level guy. He's not. And the defense is still bad. But no, he's right up there with Tobias Harris, I think. I may even rank him a little bit higher than Tobias Harris this year. Again, not based on team success, but on an individual talent level. I mean, if it comes down to you know, Trey and LaVine and Vooch, who were my final three, I just have all three above Randle and Middleton and Tobias. Mm-hmm. But these are all, I should say, close calls.
Yeah.
There aren't great separation between all of them. I think this is as close as the path could get. And to be honest with you, in 5 games' time, we could actually have this conversation again, and my final rankings would look different. Like, if LaVine and Trey goes into a major slump over the next 5 games, and Middleton and Randle go on tears, well, you know what? That changes the picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we will revisit it as it comes in a couple weeks, like once we actually get the starters and reserves, it's time to actually pick them. We will revisit this conversation because I think it'll be interesting to see how the narratives change over the next few weeks. But yeah, I mean, Randle, 23 points, 11 rebounds, 6 assists, shooting a career, not a career high, but close. Career high from 3, 39.6 on a career high volume, 4.0 attempt per game, 47.5 from the field as well. Career high from the free throw line is 2. 80.5%.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's been fantastic. Gordon Hayward's the other guy who I wanted to at least shout out. I don't think you can make a case for him over really any of the other guys we mentioned, but he's been playing really well, and I think he deserves acknowledgement for that. So you went LaVine and Trey. I'll go Trey and Vooch just to be contrarian, but I'm with you.
No, that's fair, because then I kept my guy in. Yeah. So that's
but great. I'm with you. It is super close with these maybes, and there's a couple weeks to really sort out this mess before we actually have to make these picks for real.
Yeah.
So let's go to the West now, Mort. I think there are a lot more guys who are locks here, and then the few remaining spots, I have no idea how to parse this, so we'll have fun here.
Yeah.
Lock number one, LeBron James.
Duh.
Thank you. Lock number two, Anthony Davis.
Duh, 2.0. Okay.
Damian Lillard.
Yeah, baby.
Nikola Jokic.
Of course.
Kawhi Leonard.
Obviously. Okay.
Stephen Curry.
Yep.
I know his team has been very disappointing this year, but if we're talking about individual success, Luka Doncic.
Gimme. Okay. Yep.
So I think those are the seven for sure, without question, locks. I have two other guys listed as locks, but...
Yeah, you do, which I don't
know. Okay, all right. So number one on my list, remaining in the lock list, was Paul George, who is now out with foot edema, I believe is the exact term they used.
Right, which is why I don't have him as a lock, because that's a long-term injury, if you can call it that, potentially.
Yeah, a potentially long-term. We don't know. We don't know the timeline right now. The Clippers haven't said anything, but we don't know how long he's going to be out with this, yeah.
Right, but Otto Porter had it, and he was out for just such a long time last season. So it doesn't necessarily bode well, which is infuriating, because otherwise I would agree that he should have been a lock. And if it turns out that this is a mild injury against all odds, which, knock on wood, then he's back in the lock.
Yeah, because we need to talk about Paul George for a minute, because he, after the playoffs last year where he got the pandemic P label and all that stuff, he's just developed this reputation as a guy who can't put his money where his mouth is, or like a playoff choker, whatever. Paul George has been phenomenal this year.
He has.
He's shooting... I didn't even realize this. He's shooting almost 48% from three-point range on 8 attempts per game.
Yeah.
Like, Paul George, when we talk about the best shooters in the NBA, I don't know how Paul George doesn't come up in that conversation.
Well, he does when you and I talk about him, because we've been on this for a while, I think. I mean, this is a guy who should be brought up in the same breath as Stephen Clay.
Yeah. He's ridiculous. And a lot of these are self-created, too. This is not just like a pure catch-and-shoot J.J. Redick, Joe Harris type. He's making a lot of these on his own.
You know, I realize that this is going to go in a different direction, but if the Warriors were ever serious about making a play for another star and trading away guys, he's the guy I would want.
Yeah,
if I'm them. Like, I don't think that he's available.
No.
By any
no way.
But like, let's say next year, because Kawhi still hasn't extended, and I think he's staying. That's not like we're just spitballing here. Like, let's say Kawhi is gonna go. No, you know what? I'm gonna go to a different place.
Because going back to Toronto. Reasons.
Yeah, or wherever Uncle Dennis wants him to go. Right. And the Clippers are going, well, then let's see what we can get for Paul George. Maybe we can get some picks back from what we sent out back in the day or whatever. If the Golden State Warriors are there with all their future picks and like Kelly Oubre, well, he can't. He's a free agent. But
Wiseman, the Minnesota Wiseman, pick.
Yeah, exactly. And like Wiggins for salary matching, I guess, would have to be necessary, but okay. That's Paul George, right?
Yeah.
A Steph, Clay, Paul, even though Clay is like such a question mark right now. Like, we just don't know how he's going to return. But that would be interesting just from a shooting perspective. Like, good Lord.
Yeah, I just looked this up. So Paul George is shooting a career high 50.8% from the field this year. He has had a career low 26.9 of his 2-point shots assisted. So he's creating almost three quarters of his shots from 2-point range. Only 66.7% of his threes have been assisted, so he's creating one out of three threes as well.
Yeah, yeah. That's a really high percentage for someone who shoots the ball at that volume.
Yeah. And at that 47.8% from three, yeah.
Agreed, at the clip, yeah. Too, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's also averaging a career-high 5.5 assists per game. Like, the scoring is down relative to his one MVP-caliber season in OKC, but this is the second highest scoring total of his career. Like, I think what happened in the bubble last year really motivated him, and this has just been a world-wrecking version of Paul George. Like, you know, and I'm sure the shoulder, too. The shoulder, you know, he's not removed from a shoulder, or he's further removed from, I think he had surgery on both shoulders, right?
Was it both?
I thought so.
See, I don't remember if it was two surgeries on the same shoulder or it was both.
Either way, he's further removed from shoulder surgery. I'm sure he's feeling better. So, you know, this is... If he is not going to miss extended time with this foot injury, knock on wood, that's why I have him as a lock. Just because he has been that damn good. And, you know, I think the Clippers are somewhat flying under the radar because they're in that Bucks camp of like, I know, we fell for you last year. We're not doing it again. We'll see you in the playoffs. We don't care until then. But the Clippers are really good. Paul George has been fantastic. And again, he deserves it if he's...
I had Kawhi as my MVP, man, of course. I mean, they're good. I never understood that just because the team failed. Like, yeah, okay. One thing is that the Bucks have failed twice in the playoffs.
Right.
That's more pressing to me than failing once.
Yeah. That's fair.
So, yeah.
Okay, and my last guy that I have listed as a lock, and I can understand why you might push back against this if we're taking the entertainment value into account, is Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, but that's not why.
Okay.
That's not why. I think if you have a Jazz player in as a lock, that shouldn't be Gobert. It should be Mitchell.
See, I wish we had Ben Dowsett in here right now, because I think Jazz people would disagree with that.
I know. Yeah, I know they will. They love Gobert. I do too. It's not that. But look, Mitchell is still such an offensive engine. I understand that when he hasn't played, they have still survived because their offensive system has dramatically improved. But in a playoff context, in terms of like having a number one guy, someone who just takes so much pressure away from everyone else, it's just that guy. And here's the thing, something that's interesting as well, and I think it was Mike Prada previously from SB Nation who brought this up on Twitter, or he responded to someone else who brought up the point, was that the game no longer is 50-50. It's not, you know, defense wins championships anymore. Like, it's not 50-50 defense-offense. Like, in terms of how good you are as an offense is just dramatically more important. It's like 65-35 or whatever. And seen through that lens, I'm going to go with Mitchell. And I'm not saying Gobert isn't worth being a lock himself. If anything, you could argue that both those guys should be locks. I'm just saying, if you have a Jazz player as a lock, I would want that to be Mitchell and then Gobert right next to him.
Yeah, I mean, I can certainly hear that argument. And I saw that Prada thread as well. I thought it was really interesting. I think Gobert might be one of the rare exceptions in that regard. In that, I mean, their entire identity in terms of a defense is built around him. Right. And, you know, they have the third best defense in the league in large part because of him. Yeah, I'm pulling it up right now. So with him...
And they have the fourth best offense in the league also, by the way.
So with Gobert on the court, they are allowing 102.5 points per 100 possessions, which would be almost 2 points better than the league-leading Los Angeles Lakers.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
With him off, it is 110.3. So that is a 7.8-point swing. 110.3 gets us to tied with the Toronto Raptors for number 14. Hmm. So, again, I know... All-Star game, like, Rudy Gobert is not a good fit in terms of, like, I want to see this guy run up and down the court, and, like, we don't care about playing defense, blah, blah, blah. I get it, but...
Oh, by the way, I didn't make that
argument. No, I know. I'm just saying, in general, okay. Like, that, I think that is also an argument against his All-Star case, even though it shouldn't be. But, like, from an aesthetic standpoint, I agree. Rudy Gobert has no place in the All-Star game. I don't... Yeah, I know they played more defense last year, especially with the new Elam ending. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I could understand why you wouldn't want to see him in there. But, I don't know, I just think defensively what he does is just so game-changing for them. And, you know, they are the... Right now, they have the best record in the NBA. So that's also working in his favor in terms of why I consider him a lock.
So why are we even having this conversation when both of them so clearly be in that?
That's fair. I mean, I did not put Donovan as a lock, but he is one of the three guys I have as a reserve.
Yeah, but then you should put him as a lock.
Oh, that's fair. Okay. I mean, maybe I've been following the wrong Jazz guys.
If you're giving the Brooklyn Nets three All-Stars when they're just four games over 500,
yeah,
and you're like, no, I only have one Jazz lock, despite them having the best team in the league. No, shame on you.
Okay, that's right. I mean, he is shooting a career-high 41.5 from three on career-high volume.
It's not even the stats, though. Like, you watch their games as well. Like, it's the influence, the intelligence level. He's just better and smarter now.
Yeah.
It's the passing. It's... it almost sounds like I'm some healer or something. Like, he's beyond stats now. Like, it's not that.
Right.
It's dictating the flow of the game. It's like the game is slowing down for him. He's taking that Kawhi leap that Kawhi did a couple years ago where the numbers didn't drastically change, but you could just see the impact. You could see the game change for him. The approach, the way he produces. Like... But yeah, like, go on with the stats then.
Well, no, I mean, those are the big ones going in his favor. I mean, he made it last year. He made the All-Star game last year, and he's better this year, so you could just really end it at that.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably, his true shooting is at a career high, 56.9%. You know, PER, who cares, but that's actually lower than it's. Lower than you would expect for an All-Star, but I agree. Between team success, importance to what they're doing, really on both ends of the court, especially offensively. All right, I'll push him in as a lock. That's fair.
Yeah, I think he's a winner.
Yeah.
And I realize that the whole winner argument, we've been having that before. Like, one guy won't win you games necessarily, but he's a guy who adds to wins. He is a guy who gets you in a position to win games consistently. So, and I'm not saying Gobert doesn't do that. Of course he does. But, like, often from an offensive perspective, he does as well. And kudos to the Jazz for having the team that they do.
Yeah. Well, our locker room discussion agrees with us. They think both should be locks. So we'll call them both locks, and that means 10 spots are taken, assuming health for Paul George. So that leaves us two reserve spots and a number of candidates to go through.
Oh, boy.
So who would you go with for these last two spots, Mort?
This is where I really wish that the Pelicans had a better record.
Yeah.
Because then it would have been... so easy.
A lot easier, for sure.
Well, hell, you know what? I'm still going to do it.
Both?
So here's the thing, right?
Oh, wow.
So, no. I get it. They're 9-12. They shouldn't have two All-Stars. I don't disagree with that. It's not that, but they're both really, really good.
Sure.
They're both really, really good, and I don't think it's their fault that they've struggled with a lot, you know, Lonzo Ball playing their guard spot this year, or JT Redick suddenly looking like he's 150. Bledsoe's been fine-ish, but that's about it. They haven't really seen any major development from, you know, Josh Hart. And I think Kyle Alexander Walker has been good, but not great. It's just this weird roster, and I don't want to put that at the feet of Ingram and Zion. Like, Zion needs to be in there. Just, he's so young, and the way that he produces right now is insane. I mean, we're talking about a 20-year-old kid who's putting up 23.5 points per game, shooting 59% from the field. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's ridiculous. And he's also a really good passer, but he's struggled finding those, you know, getting those assists up because the teammates around him just aren't that good outside of Ingram. I mean, you won't find the great shooters or great offensive talents around.
Nope.
It's basically him and Ingram who runs the offense. And that hasn't led to a lot of wins, but I do think it's prevented them from being a really bad team if you catch my drift, like someone who's just in the tank. And for Ingram, you know, he's becoming an all-around player. I think his defense is better. He's such a dangerous scorer. He's much more dangerous shooter as well. Playmaking. Like, yeah, you know what? Again, we're talking about individual talent level here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm going to go with those guys. I understand that there might be more deserving candidates. You can bring up a Christian Wood. Absolutely. I mean, look, more than anyone, I would have reason to argue Christian Wood. Come on.
I'm shocked that you're betraying your boy.
No, I'm not betraying him. Look, here's the thing. I would stand to gain so much by picking Christian Wood because I had that guy pegged for well over a year ago. But I just think Zion and Ingram are on a different level right now than Christian Wood. I think Wood is close, but I think they are just a tier above. And if we're going off of just individual talent, and if we're taking into account entertainment as well, sure, why not? I will say this. If Christian Wood gets in over one of those guys, I wouldn't complain. Because, like you said at the top, he's very deserving. There are a bunch of deserving players here in the West maybes that won't get in. So, yeah. So someone is going to get the shaft, and unfortunately, that's Christian Wood. And then I hope that by basically shafting him here, I hope he gets the Dame effect. And he goes, how much more do I need to prove? And then next year he comes back and he's like just tearing up the damn league. Because that'll only make me look even smarter down the
line. There you go. That's the altruistic reason to pick Christian Wood.
There we go.
To make you look smarter in retrospect. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like yours.
Full disclosure, I have Christian Wood as one of my two for now, with the acknowledgement that he just severely hurt his ankle and is week to week and is going to fall out of the race because of it. So I'm picking him now, fully knowing that in a couple weeks when we go back and actually pick our reserves, I will probably not be picking him unless he's miraculously back on the court. But I think for what he's done so far, even throughout all of the James Harden drama, he's been their best player this year, and that includes Harden.
I would agree. And you know what's really fun to think about sometimes? It's how many teams just moved off of him that he could have been on right now. The year before, he was on Detroit where he started to break out.
Yep.
He was on the Pelicans, right?
Yeah.
Or was it the Bucks?
He was on, both. The order. He was on the Bucks. Yep. The Bucks. The Bucks signed him in September 2018. They waived him in mid-March. Pelicans claimed him 2 days later. And then they waived him in July. The Pistons claimed him 2 days later. And then had him all of last year. And then,
I'm just saying, that could have been fun, right?
The Hornets had him in 2016.
It's funny how patience sometimes could be a thing, right? Like,
The Sixers, Sam Hinkie was the one who found him originally. Just pointing that one out. But, yeah, I mean...
Oh, yeah, I did, too, in a recent video from the NBA show that you can find on YouTube.
But, it's especially funny to think about, you know, for the Hornets in particular, who could desperately use a player like him and who we thought was one of his best free agent landing spots this past offseason.
Right.
Or even the Pelicans. Imagine Christian Wood next to Zion and Brandon Ingram.
That's the big one for me.
Yeah.
That's the one that could just have been so much fun. So if you had Wood at center who could space the floor, Zion at, you know, the four or whatever you want to call it. See, again, like, positions doesn't matter because he's like Giannis and Luka in the sense that he just has the ball and he goes, right?
It would be,
doesn't even matter.
It'd be like an inverted 5-4 on offense, I feel like.
Yeah. And then you have Brandon Ingram, who could just basically free roam and get like the Sean Marion treatment in Phoenix, where you won't really have a whole lot of plays called for you. You just pick up 20, 25 points a game just by being around the attention, the action.
Yeah.
That could have been fun.
Yeah.
That could have been super fun.
I think all three of those guys probably would have made the All-Star game had that been the case. But alas, because then the team success angle would be working in their favor instead of working against them, where they are tied for the third worst record in the West right now.
Yes. By the way, so how much are Suns fans going to stalk us and murder us?
Well, I mean, I haven't made my other pick yet, full disclosure. But yeah, let's...
Well, you have it in this email right in front of me, so if you're trying to change your pick right now, I will call you out.
But yeah, let's go into the Suns, because I think you could make an argument for both... Let me watch my wording here. Devin Booker and Chris Paul will at least come up in this discussion.
Yes.
Why would you go for your... I mean, you picked both Pelicans guys over them. So why'd you pick those two over either Booker or Paul?
So I think context, like I said earlier, also matters. Mm-hmm. I think when someone that young as Zion produces to this level, I think that needs to be recognized, because what he's doing is pretty special. And the same goes for Luka as well. I think he was robbed of not getting an All-Star nod during his rookie season. Mm-hmm. I think that is impressive. We always go around and we talk about, oh, how special it is that players do, you know, X, Y, and Z. But why do we not apply age to that? Why do we have this idea that players have to go through a certain amount of experience before they're worthy of being an All-Star? I think that's crap. I think that's utter crap. I think you have to maybe grade it a bit on a curve when it comes to age. Like, if Zion did what he did right now at the age of 27, okay, he would be probably in the similar Tobias Harris conversation, because it would be super impressive, but he would have been in the league for almost 8 years, so it's sort of expected to that extent. This guy is 20 years old, and he's putting up almost 24 points per game. And he is drawing in the level of attention that he's doing. Like, if you see the gravity that dude just has, it is at the age of 20. I think that matters, man. I think being that good that early, it counts for something additionally. That is part of the allure. That's part of a skill set that's going to grow. And I realize you shouldn't make an All-Star game based off potential. I understand that. But if you look at the context of his age and his production, It's unprecedented, and I think we would be kicking ourselves if we did not make sure he got in the All-Star game. It's sort of like when we look back through history, and we sometimes look at like voter fatigue, mm-hmm. and we go, oh my god, like someone really screwed the pooch in 93 and 97 by not giving Mike the MVP awards. Like, Charles Barkley and Karl Malone both had great years, but Mike came out in the end and just, like, bitch slapped him in the finals completely. And he was also better when you just look at the numbers and you look at the impact. Like, he was better.
Right.
And there's this certain level of regret when you look back at things and you go, oh yeah, because we were just kind of thinking too much about it. This is a 20-year-old who's, you know, in the top tier in the league in scoring, and who is just doing things that no other 20-year-old should be able to do. I think that matters. And as for Ingram, I just think he's that good. I think right now he's better than Zion, because he's more nuanced. He understands the game better. He plays it out. And I think he's reached a level now where I would legitimately consider him to be on that superstar bubble. I think he's that good. It's just a question of putting the right guys around him. I compare him a little bit to a Zach LaVine in that sense. I think... He probably is the number one guy, even if Zion handles the ball a lot more. I think Ingram is the guy you kind of give the ball to make things happen. And I think right now he's kind of miscast. But as Zion ages out and becomes, or not ages out, but as he ages and becomes even better, I think Ingram is going to be, you know, slide into that secondary superstar role where he'll just be tremendous. But what he's doing right now with the usage trade, with the circumstances, is mind-blowingly good. So that's my reasoning.
Yeah, I mean, Ingram's numbers are right in line with what he did last year, basically, and he made the All-Star game last year. I think Booker, who also made the All-Star game last year, His numbers have taken a step back pretty much across the board this year, even shooting percentage, which you would not expect playing next to Chris Paul. And I think there's been somewhat of a push and pull early on. Like, the Suns just aren't as good as we thought they would be coming into the year. And I say that fully knowing they are currently tied for fourth in the West. So that's not, you know, that is where we expected them to be. But I think overall, they just haven't found exactly how they're going to play yet. And, like, you know, Mikal Bridges has taken a big step forward, which is great. But the, you know, we were saying this early in the year, like, it was really kind of those tertiary complementary guys who were keeping them afloat. And then the Booker, Paul, DeAndre Ayton core weren't performing at the level we thought they would coming into the year, especially with the addition of Paul.
Right. So, and also, like, just to wrap up Booker himself before we go on to the team schemes, just so we don't forget it, this is a guy who was the primary playmaker last year, who was now supposed to slide into more of a secondary ball handle role, but he's upped his turnovers, like, even as playing more off the ball. Like, he's just been way more, what's the word, like, careless. And, like, so his assist percentage has gone down by almost 13 percentage points. But his turnover percentage has gone up by over 1.5%.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I mean, that's just not improvement, right?
Yeah. I think, again, it just comes down to, like, him and Paul still figuring out how to play with each other and then also factor Aiden into that mix. And that isn't to say anything about the Suns overall. Like, I think they're still a very clear playoff team, but
agreed.
I also don't think the version of the Suns right now is the version of the Suns we'll see in a couple months from now. Like, I think they're going to get better as they grow more comfortable with one another, but because of these early acclimation struggles, I have trouble making a legit all-star case for either of these guys when, yes, you know, you can make a case for both of the New Orleans players, or, you know, move down the list. SGA, I think, has a really good case.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got a good case as well. Also super young. But yeah, I mean, I think you raised a really good point here. It's not that we're penalizing, you know, Booker for just becoming a, you know, a part of a better team.
Right.
That's not it. It's on an individual level. I mean, he's just regressed in so many areas. And like, the bad stats are going up, the good stats are going down. I mean, he's almost 10 percentage points worse from the free throw line. Like, every, you know, shooting metric is down, turnovers are up, assists are down, are down. He's the defense, if, like, that's one thing, right? I think he's gotten better defensively, but not to the point where I look at that and I go, oh yeah, he's a much better player right now overall. Like, no, the very moderate and modest improvements he made defensively are nothing to the regressions that he's made offensively. So, and yeah, you can argue team context and whatnot, but if he just mimicked last year's numbers, or even it took a slight dip, fine. I would have him in there. That's not a problem. But this, when you look at the advanced metrics and all that, this is not a slight dip.
Yeah.
It is more than that.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, I think it's just given the competition around him. If this was like we're choosing between him and Michael Porter Jr., you know, that it's an easy case.
Right.
But there are,
oh, absolutely.
There are a lot of guys with deserving cases this year. So you're really having to nitpick once we get into these final few spots.
Can I ask you a question just to make you really uncomfortable?
Yeah, sure.
Who's the better player right now, Devin Booker or Mikal Bridges? Who has the higher impact?
Well, I think those are two different questions.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
I think Devin Booker is the better player overall.
Yeah.
I think you could argue that Mikal Bridges has had a similar impact this year.
So, if that's the reason, I actually agree with you on that. Why is it that we are not finding Mikal Bridges on a list like this? Is this because we have this preconceived notion that it is name recognition?
I don't think it's just name recognition. I mean, again, what's Mikal Bridges' case over De'Aaron Fox or over SGA or over Brandon Ingram, over DeMar DeRozan.
No, but see, what I'm really attacking here, or not attacking, what I'm trying to raise is the question of what do we actually put into to stock here? Do we go into influence? Do we go into just talent level? Do we go into statistical production? It's sort of like when we're talking about the MVP and we can't really define it in the right way.
Right.
Or maybe MIP or whatever. Like, it's certain awards are just difficult to have a certain rule set around. I think that goes for all-stars and generally when we're doing player evaluation as well. Because if we, you and I agree that there is a case to be made that Bridges is the more influential player on the Suns, at least this year. I'm not saying overall that, that he's going to be more influential than Booker. But for the 20-odd games, whatever they've played this year, you know, Bridges has been arguably more impactful than Booker. Should that play a bigger role in determining, for example, all-star? Should that play a bigger role in when we are evaluating players? Like, are we looking at this wrongly by just going with the usual suspects?
I mean, possibly, but again, I think to your overall question, like, what defines an all-star? I think it's a mix of everything, right? It's certainly name recognition, but you know, also statistical production, both on just a pure per-game basis, and then also advanced. I think you're looking at team success. I think you're looking at, you know, for a guy like Bridges, I think it's just tough unless their team is so good. You know, I'm going back to, like, what was it 2013 Atlanta? I don't remember what year. 2014, where they had, like, all of their starting lineup except for, that's the only case.
Who's the exception? Was that DeMarre Carroll?
Was it Carroll or was it Kyle Korver? I don't remember.
No, no, Kyle was there. He even hit seven threes in the All-Star game.
Yeah, it must have been Carroll. but yeah, I mean, that's the type of thing where, like, you know, you still would argue Mikal Bridges is the number four option on that team. So,
yeah, but he's their best defender and by a long shot, honestly.
Right. Like, yeah, I mean, I think if the Suns had the number one record in the West instead of the Jazz, it'd be easier to make that case.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, as the number four, I just don't think he has any real case over.
No, no, it's not about a case. It's just the way we gauge it.
Right? Right.
I think it's interesting because if we're talking about defense, like you had Gobert in your locks, which, you know, overall I agree with if you added the list of locks, but that's a defensive-oriented player more than anything. And so that's he goes on a reputation level here. It's not just that he's good, but it's also the name recognition and whatnot. And I'm just trying to gauge, if you go into All-Star, do we need to warp our thinking a little bit? Or hell, maybe I'm overthinking it. I could be galaxy braining this.
Yeah, I don't think Gobert is just pure name recognition.
Oh no, no, I didn't say that. Yeah. I said that's part of it. Like,
well, but
he is a influential defender.
Right. I mean, the stats back that up, right? I mean, it's not just he's like, oh, this is, we just know this guy is good at defense. It's like, yes, they are a world record on defense when he's on the floor, and then they're just average when they're not. So it's like, yes, he has that reputation, but that reputation is earned because they've built their entire defense around him. Whereas a guy like Mikal Bridges, you know, their offense is better with him on the floor. They're averaging 6.4 points more with him on the floor. But their defense is a lot worse with him on the floor. So his on-off swing is only 0.4.
Yeah, but that's taking into account the four players that he plays with.
Yeah. But that's not a great sign if their starting lineup is not... He has the highest on-off split of anyone in their starting lineup at 0.4.
Yeah, that is definitely not a good look.
Yeah.
That is interesting. Like, obviously, you have to look at it from a statistical perspective as well. But you know that individually, he's a great defender. Like, he can hang with virtually everyone. And it's just that a whole notion of where do you separate the marks, right? This is granted, this is a very theoretical and exploratory talk. It's just me that's trying to gauge, like, how do we actually set this thing up? Like, where does the line break?
Right.
Where do we go from, oh, this guy is super influential, But that doesn't really matter because we want to get maybe a potentially less influential guy in because he scores more points or whatever. And again, I'm not saying Booker isn't a better player. Obviously, he is overall. I'm just saying this particular year, you and I have certainly made the case that Bridges could be more influential this year. So I think it's just an interesting conversation.
Yeah. And again, if he was not facing a ton of competition,
yeah,
it would be one thing. But, you know, I can't make a case for him over SGA. De'Aaron Fox, who's averaging 22-7-3, shooting a career, or, you know, second best from three on highest volume ever. DeMar DeRozan, I think, again, it's hard to make his case over some of these other guys, but the way that he's reinvented himself, I think, at least deserves some praise, and I think he should at least be brought up in these conversations.
He's been really good. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's almost putting up 7 assists per game as well.
Yeah, career high, 6.6.
Yeah, he's still giving you the 20 points. He's still giving you good rebounding, you know, reliant scoring. Like, stability is just, that's him, right? Whenever we talk about his weaknesses and whatnot, something we rarely bring up, which we probably should, is his consistency.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's there every single night, you know, and giving you a certain level of production that you can really rely upon. Is it All-Star worthy? I don't know. I don't think so, not this year. But that's not to downplay who he is as a basketball player.
Right. Yeah, so full disclosure, with my other pick, I went Christian Wood for the one reserve. I'm going, this is one that is probably going to change by the time these reserves come out, but because of team success, and just because this guy, he can't retire with the, like, best player never to make an All-Star game label on his career, I went with Mike Conley as my other pick for now.
Yeah. Yeah, you did.
I know it's a reach. In terms of per-game production, it is a reach compared to a lot of the other guys that we mentioned. But I also don't know that we can hold against him. This is similar to the Bucks last year, where, you know, Giannis put up just ungodly numbers despite only playing like 32 minutes a game or whatever.
I think it was just 30, right?
Yeah, I know it was a hilariously low number compared to LeBron, who was averaging like 37, and we were acting like that was an actual MVP race. Similar, but like Chris Middleton made the game, the All-Star game last year, and he played 29.9 minutes. Mike Conley is averaging 29.3 minutes per game this year because the Jazz are just blowing teams out of the water, and he doesn't have to play in the fourth quarter. And I don't know that we should hold that against him. In fact, I feel like that works in his favor, that he is contributing to a team that is so good that he doesn't need to play. That's the goal, right? That's like what every team wants to have, is your starters don't have to play in the fourth quarter because you are destroying teams to that extent.
But I would agree.
But with him on the court, I mean, this is just the version of Mike Conley that we thought we were getting last year. And it's just good to see him. You know, it took him a while to get used to being on a new team, of course. But yeah, look, oh my God. Ready? Ready for this? This speaks to your point, too, about you have to take into account who he's playing with in terms of, you know, like his defensive rating, his individual defensive rating, or the Jazz's defensive rating with him on the court. But with him on the court, they are averaging 116.7 points per 100 possessions offensively. They are allowing 98.9 defensively.
Oh my God.
So they have a 17.7 net rating with him on the floor. With him off, they are scoring 108.5, allowing 114.4. So they're a minus 5.9 without him.
Yeah.
Differential of 23.6. The next closest on the Jazz is Rudy Gobert at 13.5.
Yeah.
There's my Mike Conley All-Star case.
Yeah. I'm not saying he's not deserving.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not saying he's not deserving. And you could look at it from the emotional perspective as well, as he needs to get in there before the career is over.
Yeah, like this is probably his last best shot to make it in. So that is,
I would agree,
certainly part of it. And I hear you on the Pelicans, guys. Like, if the team success is working in their favor. Like, if they go off and reel a 4 or 5 game win streak and get right back into that playoff conversation, it'll be hard to keep either of them out. And I think, if nothing else, this was just a fun thought experiment today to see, you know, I think there are some clear locks in both conferences, assuming health, but to just see how competitive these races are right now. Like, you're going to see a lot of people arguing, you know, now that All-Star voting has started, you're going to see a lot of people arguing for players on their favorite teams in the coming weeks. And Tobias Harris was the one guy who really sparked this for me, where it's like, okay, I get it. He's deserving, but who are you bumping out?
Right. Well, I mean, look, both LeBron and Giannis seem to be very, very anti-All-Star game, so they're probably bowing out.
Well, apparently you get fined very heavily if you are healthy and you don't go. But yeah, Embiid.
What is heavily, though?
I have no idea. But I mean, Tim Bontemps, I believe it was, I think it was him, after Thursday's game, asked Embiid about that as well. And Embiid was like, he basically said first he said he's not even sure if he gets selected, which, okay, sure, humble Joe. But then he was like, yeah, I don't know, if I'm banged up, I might not play. So I it would not surprise me if there are a number of guys who are just like, I'm sore, I don't really want to go. We're just going to call it like right ankle injury, and or like right knee soreness, back soreness, whatever. Because you're right. A lot of the main, De'Aaron Fox came out and said it. He was like, this is stupid, we should not be having this game.
Yeah.
But then
my point is just, if the fine is like 50,000 or even 500,000, like, who cares if it's those guys?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you probably, I don't care how rich you are, eating a $500,000 fine sounds pretty awful.
Yeah, of course, but if you're earning over 200 million?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I think you're right to bring up, like, between COVID and just injuries in general, that will help alleviate some of this logjam for both conferences, I would assume. It would not surprise me if we have a few holdouts on each side. But, yeah, I mean, right now, it's going to be really interesting to monitor the next few weeks and see these guys on the fringe of that All-Star conversation, how it all shakes out.
Yeah.
All right, so I think that is a good place for us to wrap up. Mort, thank you all, as always, for listening. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And thanks for listening to our live show on Locker Room. If you liked our show, please be sure to start your own room and engage with other fans on the app. Download the Locker Room app in the Apple App Store to be a part of our podcast. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. For everyone who is not watching WandaVision, go watch it, because we can't promise we are not going to spoil stuff from here on out.
My God. I shrieked.
It took me a minute. It took me a minute to figure out what I had just seen, and then I was like, "Oh, okay."
So, really? Yeah. Oh, as soon as I saw that, I was like, "Oh my God, that door is open."
Yeah. So yes, everyone, if you haven't started it, it's very confusing the first couple episodes, but I promise. Well, it's still super confusing, but
in a good way.
Yeah, you can start to see a light at the end of the tunnel. It's definitely going to be one to rewatch. When the whole season is out, then you'll go back and rewatch it. But yeah, it's the puzzle pieces are starting to come together, and it's been, any fans of the MCU, and I'll just leave it at that.
Also, Elizabeth Olsen deserves an Emmy.
Yeah, she's been really good.
She's been fantastic.
Yeah. So go watch WandaVision. So if we spoil something in a future episode, you won't be mad at us. All right, cool.
Yeah.
Thank you. Bye.
Don't die, man.